The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Hi, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
On today's program, we have a caller who is at a point where the kids are now out of the house, just sold the house, plan on downside. The question is, do we have a mortgage or not?
We also have a great story about a person that retired before they wanted to. They were losing their job and needed to know how to take money from their retirement account and avoid all penalties.
Yeah, before age 59 and a half, we'll show them how to do it. Stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Are you questioning if the advice you receive from your stockbroker or financial advisor is best for you? If so, run it by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Simply call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you're with us today as we talk about financial matters. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself, helping them plan their financial futures. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you have advisors you're working with today, or you're just getting started or restarted, or you want another opinion or whatever the case may be, we hope you consider this program another place for valuable information and
maybe the only place for valuable information.
Oh, the only.
What's that? Well, you see, I'm not going to talk too much about it, but we see a lot of wreckage that comes in with people that think they have financial advisors, but they're working with product salespeople.
Yeah.
Lots and lots.
I know. All the time.
Yeah.
Buying these products that their money's locked up to for, you know.
Oh, and then there was this big fiduciary standard that was going to require even people that were receiving commissions to act in the client's best interest.
That's all been put on the back burner.
That is done.
I don't know if it's done, but it's.
It's done for the time being.
For the time being, I guess. That's what it's feeling like. Interesting times.
Yes.
But in any case, if you'd like to be part of our program, you have a question for us, would like to run something by us, get another opinion or whatever the case, to join the program, feel free to call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And I'd love to take your call and see if we can't be of help in some way or another. So, by the way, for those that listen via podcast, we can also take your call, obviously not at the exact same time you're listening on your podcast, but if you call this number, we will arrange for a time for you to be when Pat and myself are both in the studio, and we would love to take your call. So let's start things off in the Sacramento region with Nancy. Nancy, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, glad you joined us.
Thanks. So I had a question about basically borrowing $200,000 for a remodel. I own a cabin up at South Lake Tahoe, and I plan to remodel it. And I wasn't sure kind of my best options for pulling money out. I do not own anything on the cabin right now as a gift from my parents, very nice gift. But I didn't know if I should pull out, you know, like a regular loan, or if I should do a home equity line of credit, or if I should look elsewhere.
Let's actually, yeah. We're going to ask a couple questions to kind of help us get to the answer. What is the value of the cabin?
I think it's about $400 to $450.
Okay. And, you own nothing on it.
That's right. It was a very nice gift.
A nice gift. And, do you own a home, a primary residence?
I do.
And what's that valued at?
Probably about $550.
And do you owe anything on that?
I owe about $200,000 on that.
And do you know the interest rate on it?
2.75.
And what was the original loan balance on that?
You know, I'm not sure.
All right. Here's one of the issues. In order to deduct the interest, we're limited on what our either original mortgage balance was for a purchase or up to $100,000 in home equity to a maximum of $1 million on a purchase and $100,000 of home equity. So $1.1 million.
On the primary residence.
Or a secondary residence. So if you go out and get a $200,000 loan on this cabin, you can deduct the interest on $100,000 of the property as a home equity loan, but you're not able to deduct the interest on the other $100,000.
Is that $100,000 against each home, or is $100,000 per person, Scott? Do you know? I don't know the answer to that.
You know, that is a good question. I've never been asked that.
I don't know the answer to that.
Which is why I asked what your original. So how long have you lived in your primary home?
Since 1980. But I refinanced about probably 6 or 7 years ago when the rates were low.
And did you pull cash out at that time?
No, I just put, well, I put money back into the house. I did a remodel on that house.
Okay. And are there any other assets? Do you have any money in a brokerage account, IRAs, anything like that?
Yeah, I have a 401k and I have a money purchase plan.
And how much is in the 401k approximately?
About $400,000.
And your money purchase plan?
About $600,000.
How old are you?
56.
You've done a nice job.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a no, I mean, just getting a mortgage on the cabin is probably the simplest thing to do. My but the reason I'm asking these questions is finding a way to deduct that interest.
Yeah, so the interest rate is so low on your house that you could get a second on that.
What's the rate on the primary?
2.75%.
For how many years?
Yeah.
How many years do you have left on it?
The maturity is in 2027.
I think you should go back to your parents and ask them for more money. That'll be the easiest thing to do.
That's good.
I don't think that's...
No?
That.
Okay.
That's not viable.
I like that.
They've been pretty generous. All right.
I don't know the answer to the question whether you're able to deduct it against both the... I'm not comfortable answering the question until we knew we could deduct it from both.
Yeah. And here's the reality is if you just went out and got a mortgage on the cabin, which might be the right thing to do.
Which probably is the right thing
I'm
to do.
I'm guessing it is. That's probably your best route. The reality is they're going to send you an interest statement at the end of the year and...
You're going to deduct it.
Yeah. But that's not... I mean, if you do that, that's not within confines of the tax law. So... That's the challenge. I would talk to a CPA,
and you want to ask the question about what the CPA may answer is, and you deduct all $200,000 because no one will know the difference.
Yeah, but that's not.
But
that's cheating on your taxes.
I understand that's what, but that is, Scott, more common than not that people take more than $100,000 out.
Absolutely,
and don't.
That's correct.
Yeah, and just take the full deduction.
But on a tax, when you do the tax plan with your CPA, that's one of the questions they ask. They ask those kind of questions.
So the question organizer that you asked is, should I take $100,000 from my cabin and $100,000 from my primary residence, and am I able to deduct both of those? And that's how I'd get to the $200,000. Does that make sense? Okay.
Yeah, so it would be better to take 100 on each one.
Well, I don't know.
We don't know that because we don't know the answer to the question of whether you can deduct it per property or per individual. That's what we don't know the answer to.
Okay, so I should check with my CPA on that.
Yes.
But my gut tells me it's on the primary residence, so the home equity.
Okay.
But if this wasn't a radio show and we weren't doing this and we'd put you on hold for 30 minutes and then get to the answer.
Yeah, for your office.
But we'd make for terrible radio.
That's right.
We'd make for terrible radio.
I can
radio.
Wait. That's fine.
It would make for, those are the two sources I would go to. And you I assume you have the ability to pay this back.
I believe so.
And you're currently working, correct?
Yes. And I plan to work for a while. So that's why I wanted to do it while I have an income.
Yeah. And do you plan on retiring to that one home or?
Yes.
And so,
are you renting it today or is it you're just for your use?
Just for our use.
Okay. I mean, if you're renting it, it's an investment property. That's a different story. Then you can deduct it. Oh. But then you have to, I think you're limited to like 2 weeks a year being there. So then it defeats the whole purpose.
Now I have to ask the question, where in Lake Tahoe?
South Lake Tahoe.
South Lake Tahoe. On the Nevada side or California side?
It's on the California side.
Alrighty.
It's about a block from the lake, and my parents actually bought it for $19,000 in 1971, and it has a lake view.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
You have a lake view cabin for worth only $400,000?
It's filtered lake view, but it is a lake view. It's about a block from the lake.
Nice. So. All right.
Appreciate the call.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Yeah. Sorry I didn't have a definitive answer for you there. But these are the kind of things, while it's good to talk to professionals before you make a move.
Yes, because normally people would just make that move.
No big deal, right? Without figuring out the tax deductibility of it. And there's a big difference, particularly if you're in a higher income. It's like having a, it's like raising your finance can cost 50%.
Yes, losing the tax deduction.
Yeah. 1-888-2 Hanson to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
They could just wait and that will be taken away from them.
What?
All the tax law changes.
Oh, yeah. Who knows what's going to, yeah. Anyway, 1-888-2 Hanson is the number to be part of the program. And we are going to talk with Noel. Noel, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, thank you. Glad to be here.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a state worker, retired last October.
Congrats.
Thank you very much. And probably about a year and a half or more when the Dow was down around 16.3. I rolled my 401k. I'd been in a 25 date target fund. And I rolled it. I rolled my 401k into at the time it was 2015 target fund, which would be, it was pretty conservative, which now would be mostly in bonds. And I'd like to get back into a 2025 date target fund, although the Dow's probably up around 21 now. And I don't know if I should wait
for a correction. Are you taking any income out of this?
No, I'm not.
So do you plan on taking income out of this? Or do you?
I'll put that off hopefully as long as possible. So my minimum required will be, and I'm 65, so in 5 years I'll be doing my minimum required distribution.
How big is this account?
$400,000.
So here's...
So let me try to understand something. So when you retired, Noel, did you shift at that time into a target date?
A little bit before then.
Before I retired, I'd shifted it into the 2015.
So I wouldn't use a target date fund.
I wouldn't use the target date fund at all.
I think they're appropriate at times.
But not for $400,000.
And when you're retired.
And when you're retired. And
they're not designed for that.
And most certainly, you've got some long bond in there. So if it's okay to have a conservative portfolio, but it's not okay to have some long bond in the portfolio. I'm sure those maturities go out 20 and 30 years in some of this. Which scares me. You should reallocate this portfolio. There's no question. You should not use the target date fund to do it.
Okay.
You should find a financial advisor that you're comfortable with, or at a bare minimum.
The fees will be more.
Yeah, the fees are absolutely going to be more.
But
or at a bare minimum, an allocation or an allocation software to diversify these portfolios. You should have at least 30% in equities.
At a very, very minimum.
At least.
Because you got a pension.
And when you go to take the money out in 5 years, you're going to be taking less than a 4% distribution in the first year.
How old are you?
He's 65.
I'm 65. Yeah.
I mean, look, this all worked out fine, right?
You did perfect.
Yeah, he's 65, retired, got a nice pension, and got $400,000 in your 401k. I would say success, right? So now we're just trying to look at it, at perfecting it. That's
yeah. The use of a target date fund is not the way to do that.
Even a 2025 later.
Yeah, correct.
No, and what happens when you want to take an income? Then you're stuck selling everything in the target date fund?
Yeah, and if you handed me that target date fund, I'd probably look at what's inside of it because it's a fund of funds. There's a bunch of other mutual funds inside of it. I would probably be happy with 60 to 70% of the holdings in there. And I'd probably be unhappy with 30 to 40% of those.
Yeah, I would agree.
And that's
every
difference.
Target date fund's different too.
If you called me up and you were 24 years of age and you had $10,000,
target date fund's great.
I'd say target date fund.
I got a target date fund for my my daughter's Roth IRA.
Because it's easy and it's a little
it's like
amount.
2060 or 2100 or something. Yeah. It's way out there, right? But yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a constant asset allocator and it's a little how much is in there? $10,000? Not much, right? So it's not appropriate for you. It's just not appropriate.
Right.
So you need to reallocate the portfolio
and then figure out the right kind of plan
allocation
to get back into.
Yeah, but at least 30 to 40% in equities. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, glad you called, Noel.
Did you say this is the right time to get back in or to wait?
We don't know what the right time is.
If I could figure out the right time,
I certainly
would. It's the right time to get a strategy, though,
and
figure out maybe you reallocate immediately, maybe you do it over a period of time.
You're going to bring in some back into equities immediately. You're going to bring some back.
Yeah.
I don't know how much, but you're going to bring it, or you're going to put a strategy together to get there, and maybe it's a dollar cost average strategy, or maybe you do it once every 6 or 12 months. But right now, there's no strategy, and that portfolio is quite frankly, depending upon how that target date fund is built, it probably has a significant amount of risk because of its long bond exposure that may or may not be equal to a portfolio that has 20% in equities right
now. Yeah, you know what's interesting, Pat, and Noel, appreciate the call. The total bond market index has increasingly amount of government bonds in them, longer term government bonds.
That makes sense.
Just by the structure of them.
That makes sense.
That's what's just the way the market's been going. So by having a total bond market, you are saying, I'm fine with having an ever increasing amount of longer term government bonds in my portfolio.
Yeah.
That's why there's not to say that there's some bond index that might be great. What we tend to see, particularly in 401k plans like this, the index that you see are the longer term bond index. So
yeah, is what we would if I opened up Noel's target date fund. That's
of course
I'm going to see.
You don't know that 100% without looking at, but pretty confident based upon the target date funds you've.
There isn't a chance in the world if I had $400,000, I'd put it in a 2016 target date fund.
I think it was.
I'd rather put it in cash.
Come on.
No.
Why?
Huh?
Why?
Because I don't think that I think it's too much risk.
Well, all right. And if you want to be part of Hanson McLean, our number 1-888-2-HANSON to join us. Again, 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, it's 888-242-6766. We'd love to take your call regarding really any financial matter, pretty much. And let's go to Denver, Colorado, talk with Sally. Sally, you're with Hanson McLean.
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So my question to you is that I currently own my home, so I don't have a mortgage. And I am taking out an additional monies out of my check each month to compensate for the taxes that that I will need to pay so that I don't have a big tax sum at the end, in April.
Uh-huh.
And so my question is, would I be better off actually taking that money and buying maybe a second home versus having that money taken out from a tax purpose standpoint?
So you don't have much in the way of deductions. Your tax bill is so
correct.
Great that in addition to being filing single and zero, you tell your employer, take extra money out and send it right to the government. Is that what's happening?
That's correct.
Okay. And your question is, if you bought another home, could that save you on taxes?
The answer is yes, it could.
But it's not a dollar for dollar offset by any stretch of the imagination. So,
okay. Okay.
Yeah. So as an example, let's assume you went and spent $300,000. You borrowed $300,000 to buy another home. Let's just say and you were paying, let's just say it's even 4% interest. That's $12,000 a year in interest. Okay. And let's assume you're in a 28% federal tax bracket. It's probably fair somewhere there. So let's assume you have a third in tax savings, which might be about right. So you pay $12,000 in interest and you will save $4,000 in taxes.
Right. And right now you're setting aside $8,400 a year for taxes. So it helps on some of it, but it changes your financial profile significantly.
Yours personally, not tax. I mean, just.
Yeah, personally, which means that you've actually taken on debt that can't be discharged easily if it goes south on you. And you may not make any money on the home. The home might actually operate at a loss. So let's divorce those two questions and say, does it make sense for you to buy a rental property? And if the answer
is that what you're thinking, a rental or a second home?
No, not a rental, a second home.
Well, do you want a second home?
Well, doesn't everybody kind of?
I don't know. I'm part of the emerging class of the second homeless. No cabin in the woods, no condo on the beach.
Oh, it's brutal.
Yeah. I mean, we keep reading about this homeless issues.
Yeah, the second
growing.
Homeless or the second, third
you don't
homeless.
Read enough about the second homeless plight that is sweeping America.
So let's look.
Well, it's one of those things that if you look at it from an investment perspective, and to your point, the real estate may not go up depending upon where you buy, I suppose, mm-hmm. and what you buy. But, I just want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing. Would it be better to, like you said, make an investment or maybe not to?
Well, and from a tax, this would be, you would not do this from the tax standpoint.
That is correct. And if you were buying a second home, you would want to buy it from an investment standpoint as a rental, because if you bought it as a vacation home or just a second home that you're going to use, you're consuming mm-hmm. that home. You're consuming it. You're spending money on it.
Right.
You know, for every $100 that you spend on interest, you save $35. You will go broke in a hurry that way. So the question is, can you afford a second home? And if you can, what kind of second home can you afford, and how will that impact your long-term financial situation? Now, we can answer that question for you, right?
And are you saving the maximum in your company retirement plan?
I am.
Okay.
What's your approximate income?
Around 170.
Okay. And are you married with children?
No.
Okay. You're single.
How old are you, Sally?
I beg your pardon?
I know your business is, your age is your business, but how many years you've been in business with them?
Oh, I'm sorry.
How old are you?
How old I am?
How old are you? How much? How tall are you? How much do you weigh?
54.
I'm kidding.
Oh, Scott.
I'm trying out.
This is on the back hole, that Weinstein stuff and Kevin
down.
Spacey, the whole bit. I don't think we should lump you in that group.
Thank you.
I apologize for that. But Kevin Spacey 54. Is such an incredible actor. So you're 54.
Your home's paid off.
Your primary residence.
What do you have? Are you going to have a pension at retirement?
I'll have a small pension from one company, yes.
And how much money do you have?
Then I have in my 401k.
How much is in your 401k?
About 1.6.
And how old will you be when you retire, hope to be? 60, 65, 70?
Probably 65.
So if you have a desire to have a second place, you can swing it.
Yes, but don't do it for tax reasons.
Yeah. So, and the reason why, I mean, because you've got another 10, 11 years of planning on working. You've already done a great job saving, assuming you're going to continue to save at that level.
And earn at the same level.
I think you'll be you should be in great shape at retirement age. Because 1.7 should be worth probably more than double what it is now.
And if you continue to actually continue to make contributions and we have some modest growth in it, you would expect that to be more than double. If you bought a house for $300,000 and it was a second home that you were going to use, as long as we amortize that loan over a period of time, would you plan on selling your primary residence and moving into the second home at retirement?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is just a second home.
It's a second home.
Somewhere up in the mountains.
You can swing it. You can absolutely swing it. If you want to, you can swing it.
But from a tax purpose standpoint, it's not really going to help me.
It'll help you a little.
It'll help you a little, but you're spending money. You're not, you can talk yourself into why that's the primary driver, but it won't be, you're going to be better off financially without a second home.
Yes, no question.
But that's my
main question.
Yeah.
But you could swing a second
home.
Whatever
you save in taxes, you're going to pay, you're at property taxes, right? Maintenance, utility, all that other stuff.
Your friends wanting to borrow it.
Yep.
Right?
All you of go up there, relatives, the blinds are broken.
Relatives that all of a sudden want to spend the holidays with you. Yeah. All those nasty things that come along with owning a nice second home.
And you guys just talked me right on out of that. So, okay.
No, there's a lot of issues with them. I mean, they really are. So.
Yeah. Yeah. They're especially if it's in the mountains in a snowy area, which I assume since you're calling from Denver, is going to be probably in the mountains in a snowy area. It adds to the complexity of managing a second property.
Yeah. From a financial standpoint, you're better off just renting when you need it.
Yes.
You really have to have a strong desire to have a second home.
All righty.
All right, Sally.
All right, perfect. Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, thank you. We wish you well. Good luck.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I understand some of that stuff from experience.
With family and all that stuff. But, you know,
don't let tax decisions drive the investment.
Regardless of what it is.
Never let the tax decision.
It's a secondary thing.
Always look at the investment itself first.
Yeah.
And then take tax benefits into consideration after
secondary.
You look at the investment.
Always. People get in all kinds of trouble when they let the taxes drive their investment decisions. So we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll continue with some calls. And looks like we still have room for a couple calls. If you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Again, that's 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, it's 888-242-6766. We'll be right back.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're still with us.
We take calls.
I'll tell you, real quick, there was a report out in the, I believe it was the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago, on Morningstar, the rating service that puts the stars on the funds, you know, the 5-star mutual fund or 4-star mutual funds. And I've always, I've often wondered if that service has been helpful to investors or not.
Because
people tend to buy based upon the stars.
And the stars are predicated
on history.
And have a tendency to clump around whatever's in fashion at the time.
So this, they did some research going back to 2003, thousands of funds. And they looked at the 5-star funds, right? These are the 5-star funds. And I've heard people say only buy 5-star funds, etc. Now, of the 5-star funds, only 12% of those did well enough that over the next 5 years, they were still 5 stars. 12% were still 5 stars. 10% of them were at the bottom 1 star.
Okay. So you've got a standard bell
curve.
It's like
there was no, correct.
Like you got a standard bell curve.
Like there was no correlation whatsoever.
12% on one side of the bell curve and 10% on the other.
Pretty much.
So the star
didn't do anything, according to this.
Yeah.
Which we've always said, which, you know, it's interesting.
Well, why? But Scott, let's give the reasoning behind that. If you went back and looked at the star rating in 1998 and looked to see who the 5-star funds were, what were they?
Well, they're all growth stocks back.
And a lot of tech.
Yeah.
And a lot of tech. And that's how they got their 5-star funds, is because they were comparing one sector of the market.
Yeah, but they tried to strip it down pretty good. But also the question is, if considering that most money managers, professional money managers, can't outperform the market, if someone's ahead year after year, is it due to skill or just plain luck? And based upon a lot of studies, some would say it's all luck.
Yeah. Except for the ones that are actually outperforming the market year over year, it's all skill.
I understand that. But there are some advisors out there that will pitch portfolios.
Oh, based on Morningstar.
And one of the things at Hanson McLean for years, we've always said, look, when we want to engage with a client to help with their retirement plan and someone wants to hand over their investments to us for us to take on the management of it, we will build the portfolio after the client engagement. So once a client says, you know, once we are both comfortable that this is the right decision, then we build a portfolio and have conversations with the client on why we think it's the right portfolio for them. And the reason we do it in that direction is because otherwise, if people think, well, I only want to see 5-star funds, I think we're doing them a disservice. We would only be recommending those funds that have already had a run-up.
That are already in vogue.
Correct. And maybe not the ones that are about to be in vogue. So kind of on that, look, if you're meeting with some advisor and he's pitching you, trying to convince you that he or she is the right person to invest your money, and they give you this list of all these funds that are all 5 stars, I'd question that. I would question it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people ask us that, and we'll have this long explanation of why.
And better yet, why don't you just subscribe to Morningstar yourself and pick out your own 5-star funds?
And you can have
that's the only analysis they're going
to
do.
Anyway, we're going to hit the phones here. 888-2-HANSON to join us. That's 888-2-HANSON. We are in El Dorado Hills, California with Greg. Greg, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Scott
yeah.
and Pat.
Thank you, Greg.
I've listened to your show for many years and always enjoy the things that I learned from listening.
Great.
And I thought I'd call in today because I have a home purchasing decision to make.
All right. Fire away.
So I just sold my home, and I'll have around $800,000 cash. And my question is, do I buy a house and have no house payment, or do I purchase a house, you know, say with the 20% down, and invest the balance?
Did you have a mortgage on the home that you just sold?
Yes.
And how big was the mortgage on the home you just sold?
Not huge.
$100,000, $200,000?
It sounds like you're downsizing then.
Yeah, I'm downsizing for sure. Yeah.
How old are you?
Excuse me?
How old are you?
Oh, I'm in my late 50s.
All right. And are you currently employed?
I am.
Are you married?
I'm married.
What do you think you should do?
Well, it's one or the other. But, you know, I know that there's, if I have a loan, then, you know, there's tax advantages.
That's correct.
For that. So, you know, I've been told that I should always have a, you know, a loan, some type of, for tax purposes. And, but, you know, I've heard you guys say in the past about no money out is like money in. Yeah,
that's correct. So, money not going out is exactly the same as money coming in.
I mean, if you didn't have to make the mortgage payments, we'd be huge fans of.
So tell me about the rest of your financial situation. Minus this thing out. Forget this $800,000. What is your the rest of your net worth look like?
So I probably have, I don't know, another $450,000 in a retirement plan. And
do you expect a pension in retirement?
Well, I don't have a pension from my employer, no. Self-employed.
And when do you plan on retiring?
Oh, I would say in the next 5 or so years.
And what's your approximate income?
So I probably make, $200,000 a year, something like that.
So if your net worth outside of your home is $450,000 and your income is $200,000, retirement isn't in the near term for you based upon those numbers, unless there's some extenuating circumstances where you're expecting an inheritance or another form of income coming to you in retirement. Because you'll have a very, very difficult time replacing that $200,000 a year income. And then you say, well, you know, Pat, I'm putting money into my self-employed 401k, or you might put, I'm hoping you put $40,000, $50,000 a year towards that. But the overall, this is a big purchase for you, even if you pay cash for it. How is the 401k dollars invested, this $450,000? Is it stocks or bonds or mutual funds? And if it is mutual funds, what percentage is stocks? What percent of it is fixed income or bonds?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure on all the exact amounts in front of me right now. But, you know, it's set up a little conservative, not too aggressive. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I would want to maybe still have a house payment and maybe take that other money to invest in something that can.
Here's part of my concern. Let's say you took $200,000 of the $8,000 and used that as a down payment. Just throwing that out. And you invested that $600,000. Right? Nothing's cheap right now, right? So, I mean, it's not like this.
Right.
I don't care what you look at. Nothing's cheap. Doesn't mean it's going to fall in value, but just nothing's cheap. So my concern is that you go out and invest these $600,000. Even if it's a balanced portfolio, we enter some sort of a bear market in the next couple of years. The $600,000 falls to $525,000 or $475,000. Then how would you react as you're approaching retirement with that? I mean, that's part of the challenge when you come into new cash that you put it to work. You people just tend to view it differently sometimes. But right. my concern is if you pay cash for a house, my concern is that money that you've been used to paying for your expenses are going to go into your lifestyle and not into retirement savings. So if you could be highly disciplined and say, all right, here's what I've been, my last house, which you're probably glad you got rid of, you're downsizing. I mean, Matt, it's probably, you know, it was worth more than $800,000. So it's probably an expensive house with expensive upkeep. If you can take that money that you were spending on that last house and save that towards retirement, I think you'll be well ahead.
I agree with Scott. I would pay cash for the house. I would actually sit down with a qualified financial planner. I would put a plan in place to maximize.
Do you have any employees?
No.
So you can do like.
Do you want some?
I do.
Because you can do, if you're not planning to have any employees, you could do a solo K. You can funnel a bunch of money in each year and get the tax deduction for it and really kind of. So that money you've been spending on that last house, you can take that and say, I'm going to use this to fund my retirement for the next 7 or so years.
And
can really set you up.
And you're moving it into the market slowly over a period of time.
Which you'll view it totally differently.
Which will view it completely different. So I would pay cash from the little I know about you today. Yeah. I would pay cash for the house. I would actually figure out how to put the maximum amount of money I could into a solo K. And then maybe even save on top of that. Maybe even buy some S&P 500 or total market.
At least get to points so you know what day works and what day retirement's a possibility for you.
Yeah.
Having a plan in place, I think, is just helpful for people. Whether or not you choose to retire at the time, it's like, what's realistic for you? What needs to be done? And if you wanted to move that date up a little earlier, what would you need to do? And if you didn't save so much, when would that date be a reality?
But
whether or not you choose to retire then or not.
But I would pay cash for the house.
Yeah.
But it only works if you do the other stuff.
Yeah. If you instead you take the extra money and start doing, you know, nice
crazy
trips
things
every year.
And
it's
not, I've got to devote the next, you know, until I retire to making it all, saving everything.
Can I ask, I'm going to ask a couple personal questions. So did children recently leave your house or are you newly empty nesters or what caused the downsizing? Was it?
Yeah. So I have children that are all gone out of college at this point. So I don't have any more expenses there. Out of college.
So you know what?
This is brilliant.
So you've had all these expenditures. You had a big house. You had kids. You got through college, all that stuff. And all of a sudden,
they're playing lacrosse, the soccer. They want cleats.
All of a sudden, now you're at a point where it's like you're getting a little smaller home. Time to really focus on your retirement savings.
Perfect.
Yep.
Perfect.
That's very common.
Pay cash and then spend some time on the rest. And, you know, the things that you pay attention to will get better.
Right.
So appreciate the call.
Yeah. Sure. Good luck, Greg.
All right. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks. You know, the things you pay attention to, and that's exactly in any area of your life.
Any area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sometimes life is like a giant game of whack-a-mole.
It's one issue to the next.
You just smack
that's
it
exactly
down.
What it is.
Like health, money, family, relationships.
Part of the key is finding contentment in the midst of all that anyway, right?
Yeah, I'm not really comfortable talking about my feelings.
Or your lack of contentment.
I'm just not.
That's getting way too personal.
I started a book last week called Stumbling on Happiness.
Stumbling?
Yeah, stumbling on happiness.
Like all of a sudden you just woke up happy?
I just started the book because I'm having a hard time reading. I've set it down like 3 times because it's really kind of touchy-feeling. But the basic premise behind it is everything is relative. Everything is relative. So happiness is a relative concept as well. And the book is called Stumbling on Happiness.
Isn't it how you choose to react and respond?
Well, I'm not all the way through the book, so I don't know 100% of the premise of the book.
Oops.
getting back to this contentment and stumbling, but that is so much what life is about, is what you pay attention to, including your finances.
There's no question about it. But my point, what I was going to get to is people react differently to new investments than they do to existing investments. And it's always a challenge as an advisor, right? When someone comes in with new cash, whether it's from a sale of a home or it's inherited, If it's a transfer from a 401k, it's usually a little different because
there's some experience. It's the reason it got to where it is.
But also, while you're working, you're not paying closest attention to it. You're putting money in it. Suddenly, you're retired. You're no longer adding money. You might be pulling money out.
Your risk tolerance changes.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's important to understand some of these things going in. 888-2-HANSEN's the number. We are in Colorado talking with Geneva. Geneva, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, Pat and Scott. Nice to be with you today. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
And I'm happy to be talking to you.
Oh, wonderful. How can we be of assistance?
Okay. I have a question based on the taxes, the revision of the taxes that's possibly going to occur. So based on the unknown on the new tax revisions and the possible 401k tax changes for people in retirement, what impact might that have on our portfolios?
On your portfolios, on like how the stock market might react to it and the bond market, or how the change in taxes could impact?
So currently I have about $699,000 in 401k, IRA, and Roth, and things like that.
Are you making new contributions, Geneva?
I am currently. I'm retiring the end of this month.
Ah, congratulations.
So, thanks.
It won't affect you whatsoever.
Okay.
Well, yeah, first of all, the tax changes.
When you're talking about the deductibility of 401k contributions is what they have been discussing primarily, which is to limit how much a person could get a tax deduction.
I don't think there'll be a bill.
I don't think that's going to fly.
I don't think there'll be a bill done by the end of the year. And if it is, it's not going to become an impact in effect until next year, my guess.
So that, and that, what that is the primarily the big discussion as to will that happen or not. I don't believe it will happen. I just don't believe it will happen.
I don't believe it will either.
I think that the financial services industry has way too much at stake to allow that to happen.
Well, that's not going to happen. I think the latest thing I read, it was already thrown out anyway.
Yeah. For the rest of it, it
I would not worry about
no impact on you whatsoever.
Geneva?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Because you're right about to retire, all of a sudden your focus on financial markets and stuff is different than it has been the last 30 years, my guess.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
But you're probably going to be around another 20 or 30 years.
Right.
So the noise that's happening today is no different than the noise last year or the year before, or the year before that. I'd focus on enjoying your last couple days of work, figuring out what you're going to do in retirement, and don't worry about the other stuff.
Yeah.
That's all going to come and go. It's going to change by the time, between now and the time, you know, your last retirement check, you're going to see so many different tax bills and different.
Yeah, and what we do here at Hanson.
Stock market return.
What we do here at Hanson McLean when someone goes to retire inside of the company, we have the big airing of the grievances before they leave.
Airing of the grievances. You're on your way out.
On the way out.
Yeah, it's a great thing to do.
Uh-huh. It's good for morale.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's great. Right back to that happiness thing you were talking about, Pat. Right there.
So Geneva, don't pay any attention to this to the tax changes.
And just because you're retiring and your retirement savings is now more important to you, or at least it feels that way, right?
That's right.
But
that's correct.
But it's always been important to you, and it's going to continue to be important to you. And now you've got time on your hands, and you're going to be probably taking some money from it. Just try to relax about it all. Realizing that whatever happens in this month or quarter, it's going to pass. There's going to be something else again in the future. It's going to pass. Let's try to focus on the next 20 or 30 years, not the next 20 or 30 days. And it's not easy to do because all of a sudden you have time on your hands.
And Geneva, you know how we can speak to this with such certainty? Is we've been doing this for a long time. And anytime there's a change in administration, there is a certain number of clients that will completely freak out, whether it be on the right
or
the left.
Someone will get calls the next morning, always.
Always. where you would think it was the end of the earth. And the reality is that's their view of the world, the administration, but there's no positive or negative correlation between the administration and how the stock or bond markets actually react. But people have a tendency to draw those connections between the two. And you should, you know, Scott is right. Just try to relax and enjoy retirement.
We're going to transition now to the segment of our program. We talk real advice. And during this portion of our program, we did this every few weeks or so, we'll talk with one of our financial advisors, someone who's been with us for a period of time, and they'll share with us a story of someone that they've worked with or are working with, maybe some problem that they've helped maybe uncover and resolve. Keep in mind that the experience that you have may be different than the experience that this particular individual or couple had. So joining us today is Dave Cox. Dave joined Hanson McLean 21 years ago, so he's been here a while. He's a certified financial planner, certified fund specialist, and meets with clients in our Folsom, California office. Dave, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Oh, good to be back with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for being here, and thanks for being part of Hanson McLean for so long. You've really helped build a great organization here.
Thank you.
Tell us about a situation you were working on.
So this happened a while back, but had a couple. She was 52, he was 54. They were looking to retire somewhere in their early 60s. And he was working for the state, had a nice pension, and she was working for a utility company here in town. And she wasn't pension eligible, you know, at the time when they came in, except for her company made a significant offer to her, an offer that all of a sudden made her pension eligible. Their game plan was for both of them to retire at 60. So when we kind of looked over everything, she had about $600,000 sitting in her 401k. She had about $400,000 sitting inside her pension. And she was going to go to work in her siblings' business, her brother's business. I think she was going to go do the books for him, that kind of thing. And
so probably not the same kind of pay she was going to have as before.
No, because it was her brother, she was getting paid fairly well, but she was going to end up with about $500 short on a monthly basis that we needed to generate income. And they didn't have any other assets to generate income from. Again, her 401k, her pension, that kind of thing. So we had to go to a little-known IRS rule and reg out there called Rule 72T. And 72T is a rule that allows someone to take money out of an IRA prior to 59 and a half without paying a 10% penalty and a 2.5% state penalty in the state of California. So what we did is we took the combined total of her pension and her 401k, again, which was about $1 million. We took $850,000 of it, and we put it into an IRA, talked about risk and return objectives and how we're going to invest that for the long term and eventually take some income from there. And then we stripped out about $150,000, and we put it into a separate IRA. And when we use IRS code Rule 72T, it's, you know, there's a couple different things that we have to do in the calculation based on life expectancy, based on certain interest rates and those kinds of things. But basically, we took the money, put it in a bucket, we took a water faucet, we attached it to the bucket, and out of the bucket comes $500 a month. And she's 52 years old, and she's locked into taking that distribution for 5 years or 59 and a half, which is ever longer. And in her case, it would be longer. And worked out perfectly. She netted out about $400 a month. That was the net income she needed from that. She added that to her income that she was taking on her transitional job, and it worked out perfectly.
So to kind of summarize, you basically, there was someone under age 59 and a half, not at full retirement age, kind of had a golden handshake at work. I've seen some of these lots over the years where it's like, you can either take a retirement offer today or face something else tomorrow. So Went was going to continue working because he's a little too young to retire, but needed to supplement the income somewhat. And so you took the retirement account, split it in two. With the smaller one, you started a distribution that was not subject to any early withdrawal penalties because it was set up as part of a 72T distribution, right?
Correct. And you know, she'd have to pay taxes on the income, but not any penalties. Yeah. And that's what we're trying to avoid, was that 12.5% penalty between Fed. And
my guess on doing this strategy, it's a chance that down the road she was better off by taking this thing.
Oh, you mean
letting her pension grow outside?
Oh, versus leaving it at the company.
She wasn't even pension eligible, is what you said. Great strategy.
Yeah, she wasn't pension. Yeah, she wasn't pension eligible at all. And then, and it was an incredible offer to her. I mean, because of not being pension eligible, to have this, you know, offer being made to her, it was, you know, I mean, it was a perfect thing to happen. And then she continued on working again, you know, for her brother. But with that being said, a couple years down the road, so we're done, we're implementing this, we're meeting and everything else, she starts to scale back a little bit more from work. And as she starts to scale back a little bit more from working for her brother, she needs more income. So what do? So we've got that second IRA, that large IRA sitting again by itself, now growing. We turned around, and all she needed again was another $500 a month. We took again another roughly $150,000 out of that large IRA, created a second 72T IRA, turned the water faucet on again, had that money come out and send her a net of $400 a month. And the IRS doesn't care how many IRAs you have. They don't care how many 72T IRA distributions that you have. You just have to keep those separate, and that's what we did.
And you have to each one has to go till 5 years or 59 and a half, whichever is the longest.
Correct. And on the second one that we set up for her, it just happened to be that she was 54 at the time, because it was only a couple years after. So it was just about one and the same when she turned 59 and a half. That, again, it's 5 years or 59 and a half, whichever is longer. That's how long you're locked into that. And so she's now past 59 and a half, and now what we've been able to do is take the first IRA we set up under 72T, the second one we set up under 72T, and then the third one that we left alone, combine those all back together, and now she's just taking one distribution from one large IRA.
Dave, brilliant strategy, is why you've been a great advisor at Hanson McLean for the past 21 years. So thanks for sharing that. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We come here every weekend at this same time at this same station, and of course, you can also listen to this through our podcast, which many people now do. If you want a copy of our podcast, you can go to HansonMcLean.com. If you're new to podcasts, we even have a little video that shows you how to sign up for our podcast. And so love to have you as part of one of our podcast listeners. Anyway, enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.